You're listening to Stephanie and Fox, where we aim to educate, enlighten, and evolve your intimacy.
You can find us at stephanieandfox.com to learn more about counseling, self-study courses, and retreat services that we provide.
This show contains adult content about relationships, intimacy, and sex, and is meant for those 18 years and older.
Now please, sit back, listen up, and get ready to evolve your intimacy. So welcome back. So we're starting our second episode of our two-part series with Dr. Holly Richman. We just got finished interviewing her and learned some really good stuff about childhood sexual trauma. My name is Stephanie, and I am an LPC sex therapist specializing in all things sex.
And I'm Fox. I'm a board-certified relationship and sex coach, a sexual assault intervention specialist, and a crisis intervention specialist. And along with us, we have Sadie and Silver that are still on the line with us. And we are going to talk and process through everything we just heard. I know that we, Stephanie and I, are about to get extremely personal. I hope Sadie and Silver are comfortable with doing the same. So we're going to go ahead and bring them right on and cut straight to the chase and get this started. How you guys doing?
How you feeling after that interview? We doing good?
Yeah, my voice is still a little shaky.
It's okay. It was good. It was intense. So I want to get y'all's takeaways from it. What are some of the things that you are walking away with? And I just want to have a really in-depth conversation for our listeners. And this is just going to be raw and somewhat, I don't want to mean it negatively, but just raw and down and dirty.
Can do that.
We are good at getting dirty.
Down and dirty.
Yes. Kind of want to get dirty.
I'm surprised you didn't say don't.
So who wants to go first? What are your takeaways?
My biggest takeaway from that is that our little theory that we've been throwing around for a long time of there's no wrong way to love.
Right.
Sounds like that's pretty accurate, even from a clinical perspective.
When you mean no wrong way to love, how does that?
There isn't one way. Like the problem I have personally is that 17% of the world's cultures practice monogamy. 17%. 83% have some other version of that. Now, we happen to live in the Western society, which happens to be within that 13%, which happens to be the majority of our population on this planet. But that means that there's not just one way. Like the way we have decided in this day and age in America, that you express love by showing sacrifice and control. You give up on everybody else and you have one person sexually for the rest of your life. And there is something really beautiful about sacrifice for something like that. I find that within the extremes, like a Shaolin Buddhist monk, which is like the extreme level of sacrifice and control, right? I see a lot of beauty in that. But the problem I've had is that that's not the only way to show love. That's not the only way to have a relationship. And as we can tell by looking at divorce rates, by looking at the rates of how many monogamous relationships have infidelity involved in it, yep. Clearly we're not the only ones that struggle with that one version, that one definition of how you show love. And my takeaway from what she was saying is that there's a lot of different people out there and there's a lot of different ways to express love, to have a lifestyle, alternative lifestyles. They can all work. You just have to find the person that matches up with you.
Yes.
You need to find that puzzle piece, right? Mm-hmm. That has the same rough edges that you might, that it fits together. That's what my takeaway was. What about you?
Right there with you.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, but when she broke down the word intimacy and she was like, it's into me, pretty much is what she broke it down to. And that survivors don't want people to really see them. And that just floored me when she said that, because you're right. I can have sex, but it's when it gets intimate, I tend to run because I don't want people to see the real me, because I'm afraid they're not going to like me. They're not going to want me. I'm damaged goods, all of that type of stuff. And so I shut down and run away.
Yep. Fight or flight.
She created a whole alternate personality, basically, to deal with that.
Oh.
The the, what's her name?
The Sin? Is that what you're talking about?
Not Sin, but we used to call the your naughty girl name some name. What was your dance name?
Is it my dance by?
You're gonna have to. There was. It's Sydney? Sadie? It wasn't Sadie, it was something else. Anyways, she kind of created a whole different persona. Like, she had a lot of issues growing up with a lot of, you know, all these things, and her growth through therapy, like, her therapists have found it very interesting that she would even gravitate to something that had such a spotlight on.
Yeah, she was like
to like dancing, that. Like modeling, like doing, and, you know, being an actress in,
because
in
it's all about my body, which my body was just used all the time when I was a kid, so I always was like, am I enough? So that was part of
part of her strategy was to create this other persona that would go into that job, right?
I dance.
And so she was a very confident person that would dance. And she ran, like, she was the number one girl at her club for 10 plus years.
But I was fun and everything, but at work, it was a different mode and different mindset versus any other time. So I was that girl. That was my way of reclaiming.
Yeah, she had to create a second persona, and for me,
my gangsta bitch persona.
It was I wanted to meld the good things about that other persona in with who she really is, right? Like, take that confidence that you need to get up on that pole on a stage with 500 people staring at you.
It's different.
But you can't go into Walmart, right?
It's different.
Like, that was interesting to me, that and felt like that's something that we needed to really focus on, so that she wasn't trapped and victimized for the rest of her life.
I didn't want to look stupid, so my body I'm good with, so that's what I worked with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fun and I can talk, but I, like you said, I had to be a totally different persona when I would go to work versus home.
But in all of this was a struggle because of the childhood trauma, right? Yeah, without it, I don't know that she would have had these kinds of struggles. She could have lived a very different life had she had a better support team around her. And for me, like, I can't do anything about that past, right? But what I can do is try to make, from the moment she's met me, forward the life that she should have had.
Always.
And that's all I can do, right? And that's what we've been doing for the last 13 years.
Yeah, I agree.
Sorry, that probably didn't really answer your question.
No, it did. It absolutely did.
It kind of registers over on my side because, you know, with Stephanie, she's extremely thorough, well-spoken. I mean, when she is in therapy mode, there's no stopping her. She is a freight train. And when it comes to entertaining, she's the same way. She can show up to an event and capture that event and almost steal it away from a host by accident.
I don't even do that. I do not do that on purpose. Please, no.
But when it comes time to play, she has this overwhelming fear of getting naked, even if she wants to. Even if she's drooling or salivating over the person in front of her going, oh, God, yes, I want this with them. There's this almost like tranquilizing effect where it becomes, I'm not good enough, I don't look good enough, I'm not important enough, this person doesn't really want me, this, and she starts to create this hole for her that she can bury her head in, you know, almost like a peacock. And actually, that's what you do, you peacock. It's because they bury their heads in the sand too.
I don't think peacocks do. I think
you mean ostrich.
Or ostrich.
King is showing off.
That's right. Peacock is
ostrich.
Showing off.
Yeah. I retreat to the bathroom and cry. I have.
We
really
are both
emotions.
Peacocks, Fox. We are definitely peacocks. You but guys I wouldn't are describe either one of us as an ostrich.
I'm an ostrich. I hope not. Peacocks.
I would like the strength of legs of an ostrich.
But I do. I retreat and I cry, and then I have really big emotions, and I have to work through those.
Yeah.
And then I'm okay sometimes, and sometimes I'm not. It's just I don't know when it's going to hit or how it's going to hit, what's going to happen, and it's embarrassing. It's humiliating to me.
We call it the minefield.
The minefield?
That's the minefield. You don't know where to step, right? And you don't know where to tell someone to step because you don't know what mine is waiting for you. So it's kind of like you got to tiptoe through that field and do your best not to trigger those mines. And it's not always easy. And sometimes it happens by accident. Yeah.
Sadie, how do you navigate the minefield?
With assistance. I'm all over the place too. I'll be in the mood and then we'll be driving there and all of a sudden I'm like, he can tell my whole posture, my voice, everything is totally different. I'll go silent and he's like, what's wrong? So that's how he's helped me through those minefields. And I, like when we first met, I was just all over the place. But with his help, I have learned how to go through those cautiously. And I feel like I wouldn't be able to do those with anyone else if it wasn't for him.
But you brought up something interesting, Stephanie, when you said that to me, you know, about you not always feeling comfortable to get naked. Typically, that's where her comfort zone is. She'll get naked. Just don't try to talk to her about her past or anything like that, because that's where her triggers come from. But there's been this interesting side effect of the content that we create that I didn't anticipate, that for my philosophy, you know, I want to make these pictures as beautiful as possible, but it ended up creating this pressure for her to always feel like she has to be perfect, because people have an expectation when they see her at an event that she must be flawless. And I don't, like, that's our new battle, right? Like this flawless battle there's no flawless. The flawless doesn't exist. It's not a reality. Mm-hmm. People are attracted to people that are comfortable in their body, and that's really the secret sauce.
I think people have trauma search for that.
Yeah, for sure.
I agree. And it's the trauma responses that we have issues with. The trauma responses are things that we don't know what's going to happen, but all of a sudden it just happens and we're trying to figure out.
Yep.
What the hell's going on? A trauma response is our response to the environment around us. It's what we've been taught to do. And for you, you're most comfortable in your skin, and you're most comfortable when, you know, it's just that alternative personality comes out and she's rocking it. For me, I feel like I am so open and vulnerable, and people are going to see that I'm not, maybe not what I say I am, or I'm using air quotes, because I'm so afraid to be open and vulnerable. Because when part of my abuse was my mental, I had sexual as well, but the mental aspect of it, where I was told at one point I would make more money on my back than I would on my feet. And I was told that at like 5 or 6, and that I would never amount to anything because I was just dumb. I was meant to be looked at and not seen. And so when I started to go to school, and that was my way out of all this, is I just went to school. I didn't know what else to do, but I knew I didn't want to be in that environment. And as I was going to school and I would get more and more educated, I kept my mouth closed because no one wanted to hear me. And I have a hard time even today, like with the podcast or with talking to people, or when people want us to come do seminars and speeches, because I have to get out of my head of, well, no one wants to listen to me. Like, what? Why do they want to listen to me? Because that's part of my trauma. It's the whole package of the sexual, mental, physical abuse that I went through.
Something, what you're describing sounds an awful lot like imposter syndrome as well.
Well, I was always told I was never enough and all those, the same things too.
Well, I guess what I was saying is that I think that the average experience, like Maya Angelou on her fifth book said, this is the one they're going to figure out I'm a fraud. Mm-hmm. Okay. So imposter syndrome is a motherfucker and it affects everybody. And so on top of the childhood trauma making you see reality in a different way, now you got to throw in just imposter syndrome on top of it. And how do you get through which one's which? And is it even matter in the end? Because the reality is, it's all about the mindset you come to at the end, right? So to me, the cause was kind of irrelevant. I didn't see value into like the details of the causes. What I saw value in is, here's where I'm at now. How do I live the best possible life I can, the most successful life, the happiest life that I can within this circumstances now? Mm. And that's what's important with us. That was the refocusing for us.
So I have a question for both of you. So Dr. Holly had made a statement that sexual trauma misinforms our sexual nature, right? It's not actually truly imprinting. It can imprint, but it's not a true imprint, I guess, is what I took away from that. So do you guys feel that your trauma misinformed your sexuality? And has that been a negative or positive for you? Like, how do you look at that?
So for us, that lens was a big focus for us 3 years ago. The lens with which we look out at life, right?
Yeah.
Because that lens is all a product of our personal experiences, our own biases, our anecdotal evidence of how the world works. That's not necessarily accurate. And what's interesting to me going through this process was that her and I lived a largely identical life. Now, my professional career is definitely a lot different than hers, but when it came to just our regular life,
yeah,
we were in the same place, same boat, same everything. Yet we had two very different views of the reality that we were both living.
Yeah.
And it put me on this path of realizing that reality is bullshit, that perspective is king, that reality is really just a construct of your brain putting together light and sound signals in some fashion to help you figure out what's happening around you. And we are all susceptible to our own biases and our own personal experiences on how we translate those signals, right? So the reality is that there is no reality. I know it sounds like maybe a little too much of a conversation for this podcast, but there is no reality. So perspective is king, and that's where mindset perspective is where we focus 100%. Yeah. Changing, recognizing how our lens works so that we know, hey, our lens is a little distorted over on this side, right? So I'm not going to take that left lower side of that lens for fact. I know that in that part of my lens in my life, I'm going to always skew a little one way or the other. And if I know that's how I work, then I can operate with under those circumstances. And that's pretty much what we've been doing for the last few years.
Yes.
Yeah. So really you hit it right on the head, in my opinion. So there's something that when we teach combatives is put on your warrior lens or combat lens. People call it different things, but really that teaching is your reality is how you adapt to your surrounding. It's almost surreal in nature, because I know operators that literally will tell you, when I get deployed in a combat situation, it's a video game for me. All their muscle memory and their skills are there, but mentally in their brain, it's not even real. It's almost like a video game, and that's how they deal with that combat reality or being in that situation. I've heard other guys say, nope, it's as raw as possible to me. I smell everything. I see everything. I hear everything. I allow everything to come in, and that's how they deal with their reality. So, you know, it's that lens that you're talking about that truly creates our reality, and reality in itself is surreal. It's how real is your reality? Because you can change it thought to thought, second to second, minute to minute.
Well, I think that has a lot to do with perspective, not necessarily reality, because the reality is what's really happening, but our perspective of what's really happening can be skewed, and what can be
Right.
Yeah, but that's probably a better way of
how do you define what's really happening? How do you define that? Because if you look at, if we get, I mean, really deep here on the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, subatomic particles act differently when you're looking at them and when you're not. When they're being observed, they act differently.
Right.
So theoretically, that chair behind you right now, Stephanie, when no one's looking, could turn into a vase. And we just don't know it because no one's looked at it. So if that's physics and that's quantum physical law, then what's reality exactly? What is that? Because I don't know. Do you know? Because it's all about where the fucking observer is, what reality is.
It's
bullshit. Perspective is king.
Exactly.
Fuck reality.
I agree. And your perspective is going to be different than somebody else's. So we could all be sitting here us in our office, you see us, we see you. But if someone were to walk through this door right now and do something to me, you're going to tell a different side of the story than he's going to tell, and I'm going to tell a completely different side, and it's because of our perspective. We're all sitting in different places. We all see different things, and I think as we grow in childhood sexual trauma survivors, our perception is so skewed based off the fact that we think everybody's going to hurt us. Everybody's out to get us. No one's here to help.
Is that because... So another thing that Stephanie has taught me a lot about is filters. We all have filters that we receive information from and we output information through, because of our experiences and the life that we have led. And if you can take just a second to remember, I have filters, she has filters, or they have filters, whoever you're having that conversation with, it really puts empathy and understanding into perspective. Mm-hmm. It really does. You know, when Stephanie and I first got together, I was very stoic in my conversations, my face, how I treated people, how I was around them, etc., because I was always looking for the safe space. I was always looking to see who's trying to hurt us, what's your angle, what bullshit are you going to bring our way. I was trapped in that protector mode, you know, in that warrior type headspace, and I didn't like it. You know, I expressed to people that I loved it and I loved being this way, but internally, and when Stephanie and I were alone, I had this thriving thing wanting me to be social with everybody and be friends with everyone and almost be like this hippie who didn't give a shit what was going on around me. And while that's not realistic for me to believe that that's going to happen 100%, I have been able to adapt and become more social through the understanding of our filters and how I perceive things and things I've been through. And just giving people the common respect of, hey, this is an individual, they've lived a certain life, and just by me giving them that respect and understanding, it's helped me become a lot more social around people in general.
Ladies, are you ready to take your intimacy to the next level? Head over to our website to find out about relationship, intimacy, and sex counseling.
And gentlemen, are you needing a little bit more? Join us at stephanieandfox.com to learn tips on how to communicate with that special someone and ignite that flame.
Now, let's get back to the show. I am going to step out and say this about Sadie and I. Sure. And I'm going to leave Silver out of this because your abuse has a different nature, right? Yeah. Sadie and I, I feel like it was more frequent, I'm just trying to be nice and say it, but I feel like it was very barbaric in nature. Just, they came in, they took what they wanted. We weren't allowed to say anything. We were just supposed to give it up. And I know that for me, and Sadie, I'm going to speak for you too, and please correct me if I'm wrong, being able to take a step back and breathe and gather ourselves and say, okay, I can do this. I can go out and I can face people, or I can stand up in front of people, or I can go and dance on that pole. That takes more strength and more courage than the average person can ever tell, because we were so conditioned in our life that we were not going to be anything. We were worthless. We were never going to be enough for anybody. And then you two came along and you're like, no, you are worth something. You are enough to me. And it's just that, having your support, and like I said, I'm speaking for Sadie, so correct me if I'm wrong, but having that support from you two gentlemen is overwhelming in the beginning, because we don't even know how to accept it and we freeze.
Yeah, I wanted to be safe. So as soon as I met him or heard his voice, it felt safe. So I knew I was in a good place. Mm-hmm. And that, I've never felt like that ever. So that was very scary. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know if I was going to be good enough or he was going to leave me. But I thought, you know what? I'm just going to ride this fucking thing out. And if it doesn't work, then fuck, I had a really good fucking time. If it does, then hey, I'm excited. Let's do this. So I felt a little more safe, but everywhere else, no, yeah. Never.
Yeah, it was always just a survival. That's one thing that I kind of got off a tangent, but what I was going with this whole thing, and then I just remembered, you know, ADHD moment. I'm a master at changing and adapting. I can adapt to anything. You can put me with millionaires and I'm going to adapt. You can put me with the homeless and I'm going to adapt my personality, and I'm going to fit in and find something in common with everybody. And I feel like that is a product of my childhood sexual abuse, because I had to adapt to overcome and I had to change So I was always trying to find tactics to avoid being abused.
I was the same way.
Yeah.
I call that being a social chameleon.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you can blend in with any kind of social groups. Like that's an essential skill for my hospitality industry. And I see her do that as well. And it sounds like you is a strategy you utilize also.
I think I utilize it because for so long I didn't like who I was. And so I just wanted to become anybody else. And I assimilated to whoever was around me.
Yep. Dancing helped me.
Yeah. Another thing that kind of hit home for me is when she said that guilt is I made a mistake. Shame is I am a mistake. And that hit home for me. How about for you guys?
Absolutely.
Very much so. Like, that's the struggle. Because I struggled with this by myself. I didn't tell anybody about this until I was 18. And I didn't even know if I was supposed to be struggling. I didn't know if this was what I was supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. If this is what everyone was doing. Because I can say that it was two specific babysitters. But I would be lying if I wasn't also saying that the apartment building behind my house as a child in elementary school had full of kids that were all building forts. And inside those forts, they were all naked, playing with each other, doing stuff, like all of them. I didn't know any kids that didn't have some aspect of this going on. And I meant to ask her, I was like, I don't know if our generation was like where the sexual abuse peaked and it's been going down. I don't know if it peaked before us. I don't know where it was. We should definitely ask her that on part two at some point.
Latchkey kids.
That's what I kind of attributed this to. Latchkey kids, you know, because there was that generation where moms were at work and there's a whole generation of kids that went home by themselves and it gave opportunity for a predator to take advantage. And I don't know if that's what created the scenario. Like, there's probably a bunch of unrelated things that are affecting this that we have no idea about. Thanks to the book Freakonomics, I realized that there's a lot of connections between things that you wouldn't see right away without the study of the data. And I don't know what it is for this case, but I went off on a tangent again.
It's okay. we go off on tangents. I do want to also say that not all early childhood sexualization is abuse. And I say this with caution, and just hear me out. I have a client who... I have a client who, at a very young age, he was molested by his uncle, which in his culture, it was a friend, but he called him an uncle. His uncle was about 10 years older than him, and so he was of age, and of course, my client was not. I think it was like 5 or 6 and 16 or something like that. It was a pretty big age difference. But my client does not see that as a negative experience or abuse because he sees that as a learning experience and his sexual debut. So when he was going to other counselors, they were saying, well, you know, it's because of your abuse. And he was trying to explain to him, no, I don't feel abused. This wasn't a negative thing for me. I see this as a very positive thing because I learned this, this, and this from it. So that's one thing that I had to take a step back on because not all abuse is terrible in everybody's eyes. And so, but for me, it was terrible. I'm not going to lie. It was fucking horrible.
And you just nailed why I struggled with it because there's this weird, like, there's definitely the very early one. That had a lot more damage carried with it than when I was in sixth grade and she was a senior in high school. And it was like the last part of me, because I had younger siblings and like that's why we still had babysitters at that time. And that was our last babysitter we ever had. Now, the sixth grade experience was a lot different than when I was in first grade.
Mm-hmm.
She utilized milk to make me do stuff to her, and still to this day, that can give me... It doesn't give me a negative feeling, but it gives me a feeling.
Yeah.
Couldn't really describe it. It's definitely not negative. It's not positive, but there is some visceral response to seeing when a model pours milk on her, which is interesting. So I kind of have struggled with this as well, kind of coming to some sort, like I said, there's some philosophies in therapy circles about childhood trauma, about them owning what happened to them and like kind of owning their sexuality, which is what I kind of did. And I know that in therapy circles, that can be a bit controversial.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like the guy you're talking about did the exact same thing, where it was like, okay, this is, I'm a sexual person. This was part of my education. Mm-hmm. It started younger than it should have. I don't know that it's really made a significant impact. Maybe it has. Maybe the white knight syndrome comes from that experience as a kid. I don't know. But I've got a grip on my white knight syndrome, which was really all that was important to me. Where it came from, I didn't really know. But walking into relationships to try to fix people was not a positive.
What do you mean by white knight syndrome? Can you explain that to us?
So my therapist told me. So there's this thing. I'm guessing it's called white knight syndrome. So this thing, which probably stems from feeling like a victim at a very young age, where I felt the need to defend those that can't defend themselves. I have intervened so many times over the course of my lifetime, I have lost count. I had to learn martial arts because of my desire to step in front of bullies to stop them from beating up people. This started, my first fight to defend somebody was in second grade, defending a kid who was African-American being teased by two older white kids at the park. And that situation could have gone really poorly for me. It didn't, but it could have. And that was a little scary to me. So that same year, right after that, I started on my martial arts thing. And over the years, I have ended up in relationships with, I don't search out damaged people, but I think because of where I am sexually, that it tended to put me in the streams with people that had a lot of sexual trauma in their past. And that was not necessarily a recipe for happiness for me. I cannot fix anybody, right? It's not my responsibility to do that. I had to get to a place where I had to stop trying to save everyone, and because it was a problem, and it was a problem in a lot of weird ways, like helping a girl out with a situation that had nothing to do sexually, but would be a violation to the girl I was dating at that time. Like stuff like that, that I wouldn't have expected, so to speak.
You know, it's interesting because as you're talking, Silver, you're telling my story just in a different variation. So I grew up, I was picked on by the band geeks. I was the smallest. I was afraid of everything, everybody. It was bad. It was very bad. And it wasn't until the third year of my high school career, I moved from California to New York. And in New York, I met a different type of high school experience because I was the kid from California. I was the California beach surfing bum. Look at how cool this guy is. And I was the only Californian they had ever met. I went to high school on Long Island, New York, in Hempstead. And so it was predominantly black and Hispanic. And even though I'm Hispanic and Sicilian, I look white, period. When people meet me, it's there in their minds, there's no question. So when I tell them I'm Hispanic and Sicilian, they look at me very weird and they get like, are you kidding? I'm like, no, yeah, this is what I am. And I think my process was somewhat of the same, where after the military changed my life. My decision to join the military was at one out of necessity, not necessarily desire at the time. And that quickly changed to desire. And then, you know, I got into martial arts. I became a military cop. I started butting in and protecting people. I called it the broken bird syndrome, where I was that broken bird. The military changed that. And so, if not me, then who? It is a famous quote by an actual friend of mine who was killed. And he said, if not us, then who? If we are not the men and women to step up, then who the hell else is going to do it? And I took that and I buried it deep into my heart, and I've always lived that way, almost to the point where it would get me in trouble sometimes because I had such a strong response to bullies and people picking on people, and I always go for the weaker individual because the hell with you, I was that.
Yep.
And because I'm not that anymore, I almost feel this, what's the word?
Empowered.
Not even relief. It's almost like a mandatory call of duty. Like, if I don't do this, I feel like shit. If I don't protect someone, I feel, I look at myself and I go, what the hell? Why didn't you do something about it? You know, so it's very interesting. Yeah.
One of the other things that kind of, I didn't kind of, it really hit home for me was how hearing your story and how you negotiate everything, not negotiate, but how you plan it out. Everything is 100%. She has there's no guesses. There's no questions. You answer all of the questions before it goes into it. So there's, everything is right out in front. Everything is in the open. And that's powerful for me to hear, because there are times where I don't know what we're walking into, and that scares me. But
yeah, I can be unstructured that way a little bit.
Yes.
I have a lot of securities built in, but I don't talk to her about it. And I think that's where the downfall is sometimes, is I don't fully explain everything I've done to make sure the situation is safe.
Yeah.
Right, because you don't necessarily want her to know that, yeah, I've got, you know, we're meeting somebody I've never met before. Yeah, he's got great testimonials, but I can't guarantee that that's all going to still play out.
Right.
So, yeah, I've got my CCW. Yeah, I do have a 9 on me. Yeah, there's another one in that bag. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You have to plan for the contingencies. I would rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it, right?
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of those things I may not share with her, because that changes the whole experience for her. That's not her concern, right? Shouldn't be her concern. Her concern should just be having fun. My concern is analyzing every inch of the body language of the me doing the pre-interview, which they don't realize is a pre-interview before they even meet her.
Yeah.
They have to go through me first, and they meet me outside of wherever we're going to be meeting. So it's at the parking lot of the hotel or what have you. I do that, and I purposely get a feel for them, see where their eye contact is at, see if I get any sort of shady vibe, and I have no fucking problem walking away right then, should I have had that feeling. And we have walked away from situations in the past. It's not something I typically have to do, because my pre-interview process has gotten so good, and really analyzing the way, like, the way guys do their profiles. You know what I mean? You can see the shady shit through the way they write their profile, because you can just see where they're at. So if you start getting good at that, like, that's what I did, but that doesn't necessarily mean that she has to know all that stuff, right? And it's not about keeping something from her. It's about what I've been doing for a living for 20 years. I'm creating an environment for her, right? I specifically mold environments to create a specific emotional response for a living. I made millions doing that. So why the fuck wouldn't I use those same skill set to create these incredible nights for her that take months of groundwork to lay into it, right? Mm-hmm. So that it boils up to this precipice, this ultimate climax of this situation, whatever that might be. And then it's the reclaiming, and then it's the months of talking about that night. It's 6 months. It's the 3 months before and the 3 months after that these nights end up encompassing for us. And that's just like our style, how we came across this, because of all the things we've just talked about tonight.
We set up like our trips, and it's all planned out. And he's vetted the guys even before.
It doesn't always work out.
And it doesn't always. Like,
but when it does, man, it's been pretty awesome ride.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that takes an extreme amount of trust on her part.
Mm-hmm.
And on mine as well. And with my type of situation coming out of just my whole life, I was married to a man who was extremely narcissistic. I mean, I teetered between sociopath, psychopath. Like, I mean, legitimately.
He was a piece of shit.
My best friend, when I would go to work on Mondays, she would hug me. And she told me years later that she did that because she never knew when I was going to die over the weekend and not come back to work. He was going to kill me. And so just hearing all that, I mean, I just have all of that. So the trust for me is very hard to give. And I'm learning to let go of that and try to give him more trust. But yeah, that to me is the biggest piece that I'm having.
Yeah, and I want to talk to anyone that's listening, because there's multiple levels here, right? There's those with sexual trauma need to feel safe and in a controlled environment. Those of us that love them, that are trying to create that safe environment, you have to determine how much information you give to your partner and how much information you don't, because Silver hit it right on the key. You want to create that very sexy and safe environment, but each individual is different and what they need from you is different. So, you know, I am very big on my past, my skill set, what I'm capable of. You know, I'll paint a quick picture. So her very first play date with a single guy, you know, I called him, I got all his information. We had been talking to him for months, flirting back and forth. I gave him a set of instructions. I made him pull out in front of our, you know, into our driveway so I could, on our cameras, I could capture his license plate. I had my buddy right around the corner who is law enforcement. You know, he was ready at the drop of a dime to kick the door in. I had all the cameras in the house on, and I told the guy, play will only happen in the living room where I can see you on camera. and then as soon as he pulled up, I had his, you know, I ran his plates to make sure the plates came back to him. He wasn't renting a car. I mean, I was looking for any clue. Oh, yeah, because that happens.
Dude, no joke. That's a full-on operation.
Yeah. It's, you know, but she knew none of this. Mm-mm. All she was told is, she said, hey, you're gone in California. I'm fucking horny.
That's not even how that went down.
Yeah, you, something about that.
No, it is, how do you want me?
But no, it is. Because
no, you were like, I'm setting this up. You said you're going to go home, and it was already set up.
But you hadn't mentioned, anyway. we can go over those details.
Okay, but yeah, just keep going.
That's how I remember it. So these, I put all this into effect. I also, you know, yeah, reading through his profile, but then I contacted other people. I said, hey, I'm going to contact your references. Are you going to be okay with that? And let them know I'm going to be contacting them. You know, and so all of this goes into that one single solitary
event. Experience.
You know, and I guess that sometimes as protectors, we can assume, because we're good at what we do, that should be enough. But it's not always. You really need to ask your partner, how much of this do you really want to know? And let them determine how much information they're provided. And that may adapt and change constantly, because the first time they may love it, the second time they may go, you know what? Now that I know you're doing all that, I don't want to know, because that takes the sexy away from it. But constantly, and I'm going to start doing this because I just assume that Stephanie trusts me. She knows my past. She knows what I've been through. So I assume she knows I will handle anything that comes up, no matter what.
Yeah.
But that's an assumption.
And well, it's because you know the striker's chance, right?
Right.
Fucking the worst fighter in the world could line up on Mike Tyson and just land that one lucky punch.
Get that lucky.
Is that guy a better fighter than Mike Tyson? Fuck no.
Yeah.
But did Mike Tyson get knocked out still? Yes. You know what I mean?
Yes,
it can fucking happen. I've seen it happen.
Yeah. So I just want to throw that out there. As we're having this raw conversation, make sure that you're securing the situation, you're creating that safe and sexy environment, but also make sure your partner is involved at whatever level they're comfortable with being involved in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would absolutely.
I know for us, like, Sadie's gone through her whole life with guys that wanted to be tough guys.
Yeah.
That weren't tough guys.
Yeah.
And that little man insecure syndrome kind of thing, which can breed a lot of anxiety in the partner, because that guy is constantly thinking there's threats everywhere, right?
Well, he would tell
and
me.
He's talking tough, but it's all facade, it's all puffery. So there's no real confidence behind any of it, which I felt she has always noticed. And then the difference between her past and me is that I am very much a man that takes care of business, and I had to take care of business with her real early with her ex, like real early. Like I took care of that shit so hard that he wouldn't look me in the eye for 10 years. And now he's at a place, actually, we have a much better relationship now than we ever did. But it took being a real tough guy that actually really can handle shit for her to calm down. And to be honest with you, she kind of finds it sexy. So I don't necessarily keep stuff from her, but what she likes to know is that, yeah, shit can get handled. It'll be handled if it needs to be. And she's seen it happen. And then I also know that if I'm going to get in a fight with two guys, that she has no problem jumping on the back of the second.
Hell no. So. I've gotten in trouble about that. But yes. Don't fuck with me or my family or my husband, because I will attack you.
It's a real ride or die couple here. But so the security, OPSEC, you know, is real, real important for us. We talk about things that have nothing to do necessarily with a specific occurrence, but with general, you know. This is the exit. We have to always be looking at exits constantly. This, you know, you're military. All your buddies do the exact same shit. So my friends and relatives that are military have taught me these protocols, and I apply them religiously. And that's why I don't necessarily have to have each time the security conversation with her, because we already know what's going to happen if shit goes sideways.
Right.
But what we find, I very rarely is it ever been a bad situation, like physically dangerous.
No.
What happens way more often is dudes that can't perform.
Oh, I hate that. And I feel so inadequate.
Way more than anything else.
I feel so inadequate when that happens, and I feel like it's me.
Yes.
And that's what I
do. You feel it's your fault?
Yes.
And by the way, the guy thinks it's his fault, and no one's talking, so nothing gets better. That fucking happens so much.
Yes. Communication.
That has landed me in the bathroom crying so many times. So many times.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about that real quick. Is, you know, wrapping this back into sexual trauma, if you do not communicate, no words are being spoken, nothing's being heard, no understanding is happening. It's impossible.
Everyone thinks it's their fault.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone leaves with a bad taste, and no one understands really what happened.
Exactly.
Right.
Everyone was having a conversation around the real conversation instead of the actual conversation.
Yeah. You know, another thing that we haven't talked about yet is, it is okay. So another thing that Stephanie has taught me a lot about is giving permission. And that doesn't mean that anyone's controlled. But with people with sexual trauma, sometimes they have to be given permission and told it's okay to like the things you want sexually. It's okay to still be sexual. It's okay to do role play around what happened to you because you think it's hot. These things are okay. And here's your permission to do it. Here's your platform to do it. And when that happens, sometimes you see tremendous growth in that single or that singular event, because it's almost a relief. Their expression, their body just lets go, and they go, wait a minute, I'm allowed? Mm. Oh shit, I'm allowed. Yeah. This is okay. There's not something wrong with me, you know, and it almost releases that stigma away from them. And that could be a very powerful thing.
We've been told so much that we're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do this. I know in my relationship, I mean, not necessarily my childhood trauma, but in my relationship was you have to do it this way. You can't do it that way. You know, and that still played in from my trauma from my childhood, because again, I'm still not fucking good enough. And so that whole, I'm not enough. I got to do more. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. And being told, when he told me that, you know, it's okay, I battle myself. I have to battle myself of, okay, first off, don't find the drama in this situation. It's okay to be happy. It's okay to be excited about this. He's not going to get mad if you enjoy this. And it's just one thing after another where I'm just like, bam, bam, bam. And by the time the act finally happens, I'm exhausted because I've already been battling myself. I'm tired, ready to go to bed. And so it's and people don't see that. People don't see the inner struggles that we go through just to get ready and go to a fucking event. And what we have to go through just to be sexy. And I want to encourage everybody listening to have grace with other people. Have some compassion. Have empathy. It's not that you're not sexy. It's not that we don't want to fuck you. It's not that you're not amazing. It's that we have something going on in us in that moment where we just physically can't.
Women have had an unfair shake with all of this for generations. Sorry.
No, yeah.
You know, like you guys are struggling with, you know, should I be sexual or is that a bad thing if I'm sexual? Like, you don't know where the fuck you're supposed to be because there's been hundreds of years of mixed signals, mixed information. Mm-hmm. Look at something as simple as prostitution, right? Prostitution in the foundations of our country was a huge part of how they settled the West. That's how they did the railroads. When they were spreading west with the rail, they put a saloon in, they put a post office and a fucking brothel that moved all the way across the whole West till it got to the coast. And you know who owned those brothels? Women. And those women started becoming very powerful. They started exercising a voice in politics, which they'd never had before. Why is it that all that shit was legal until they hit the fucking coast? And as soon as they didn't need it anymore, now we have to make that illegal, right? Why is it always one service that's specifically not allowed to be sold that pretty much targets women? Why is all these laws seem to be targeting women from making money? Look at Twitch right now. There are these girls that are making a lot of money on Twitch, which is a platform for video gamers, where they sit in a hot tub in a bikini and play video games. They just deplatformed a girl who was making six figures a month off of her Twitch with no explanation.
Yeah.
If I started a Twitch and I played my video games in my fucking hot tub topless, do you really think they're going to deplatform me?
Right.
No. But why are they doing it to women? Like, this has been going on forever. And how do you women process this? Hundreds of years of being kept down where we men want you to be sexual, but not too sexual where it makes us uncomfortable, right? So you can be sexual, just not too sexual. You can be pretty, just not too pretty. You can have a voice, just not too loud. You can make money, just not too much. Fuck that. Fuck that. That's bullshit.
No, it's because
and
as
it all goes through, not just this, this goes through lifestyle, goes through everything.
Yeah, as much as society pretends that it still doesn't stigmatize and sexualize women's sexuality and women's looks, it really, it very much still does. Period. I mean, it very much still does. It's prevalent in commercials, in I mean, everything out. Look at marketing in general out there. You know, we do counseling and coaching and workshops. Our marketing almost has to be sexual based for us to get any traction.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yep.
Sex sells, period. And sex with women sells. That is the dominant force in marketing across the board.
But we can sell it in that aspect. We can be beautiful to look at. We can do all of that stuff. Right. But it's got to be for the men only. We can't do it for ourselves.
You could be sexy to sell a car, but don't you dare be sexy to make yourself some money.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
That dichotomy that gets me every time.
So as we're closing up.
Bullshit, and we got to change it.
We are going to change it. And I'm hoping that this conversation and our this two-part podcast really helps people understand that we are all fucked up in some way, some shape or form. Mm-hmm. Some of us a little bit more than others. Some of us have that childhood sexual trauma. Some of us have got these horrible relationships in our past where we've just not been able to do anything right. And at the end of the day, we are all in this lifestyle to have a good time, to enjoy each other, to appreciate sex of all kinds, and just to fucking live our lives. So if something happens at an event or if something happens at in an experience or at a playtime, it's okay. It's okay for shit to happen. It's okay for things to go wrong. It's okay to talk about it, and it's okay to try again.
Yeah, we all, you know, another thing, a trend I've been seeing is there's a lot of profiles and people that claim they want friendships. But the minute something goes wrong, they genocide and they cast out that couple or that individual or what have you. Ladies and gentlemen, that is not friendship. That is not loyalty. And that is not the type of community that we're trying to build. We're trying to build a community that says, hey, you need help? Here's my hand. Come here. I will help you. Yep. Something went wrong tonight? Hey, everyone pause. Something's going on with Stephanie. Let's all come together as a friend and family. Let's figure this out. Even if it means no sex tonight.
It's an intimate thing, so.
Yeah, it's a very personal thing. But a lot of people claim that. A lot of people claim it, and right. just like Silver was saying earlier, where at events you see certain things happen, that shit does happen, and people like to claim and do this thing, oh, no, we're strong, we're this powerful community, we're this. Yes, we are. And we have better communicative skills than the monogamous community does. However, we still have things mm-hmm. that are broken in this community that need to be fixed. We still have things that we need to take a hard look at and be honest with our community and go, hey, why are there 2-point-something million profiles that say they want friendship inside and outside the bedroom, but you don't actually act like yeah. friends? I'm sorry, that's not yeah. a friendship. You know, I know that's what yeah. Stephanie and I do. We're very serious about friendships. We're very serious about, hey, every time we hang out doesn't have to equal someone's dick getting sucked or yes. boobs coming out or whatever. We can have a conversation and be around our kids and have a barbecue. And you know, if flirting happens, it happens.
I mean,
if it
I'm going to grab your tits and ass. That's just, I'm going to do that.
You probably will.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, we can talk about everyday life, and it doesn't always have to be around sex.
Mm-hmm.
Because we actually want to get to know you, who you are as people, period. My wife has this huge...
We're already getting intimate.
Yeah. Well, and it just makes... If you're going to be sexual, it makes it stronger and better and more powerful if you have something in common, you have a connection with the person you're being sexual with. If you give a fuck about who people are, the fucking is better. There you go. Put that on a t-shirt.
100%.
That was good.
Mic drop.
Totally agree.
Well, as we're wrapping up, guys, I want to thank you for honest communication with us, being open about your stories. I know...
Being raw.
This is not yeah. an easy topic to talk about. And Sadie, I know you, right now I'm just looking at you and you're so much more relaxed than when we first started. And I feel like after you've shared your story and it's all over, whew, and you can take a breath, that you're going to do so much good in the community just by sharing your story. And hearing a male voice is powerful. We very rarely hear a man say, I was sexually abused as a child and here's my story. Right. And that is, I think, more powerful than anything, because I want men to come forward and start acknowledging that shit happens with them. And you know what? Maybe that's what's causing them some issues. And if it is, don't be afraid to get help. Reach out to us. We can we do the coaching, we do the counseling. If we're not in your area and you have some deep counseling that needs to be done, we can help you find people in your area that will work with you. And don't be afraid. Don't sit there in silence and suffer. You don't have to do that anymore.
For us, like, if there's one last takeaway we hope that someone can take from all of this, is that we, like you said, we all are broken in some way. We all have our little kinks that we're into. And we should be able to have a space to express that and not be ashamed of who we are and what we like, as long as it's not hurting other people and everything's consensual. That there is somebody for every flavor. And that's one thing, being in this industry for so long, or being within the community for so long, that there really is something for everyone. Mm-hmm. Whatever way you swag, there is another tribe that does it the same way. And you should be able to find them. And you can't find them until you're comfortable enough to say, hey, I am here. This is me. Where are the rest of the people like me? If you're pretending to be someone else and pretending to fly under the radar and to fit into a mold that of expectations that everyone else around has of you, that's a recipe for sadness. That's a recipe for regret. That's a recipe that is very difficult to lead to a happy life. Mm. You can't do that without being free to be yourself. And we struggle at this, and we've been doing this separately for 20 years, but together for 13. And if anyone sees us as the seasoned swingers or what have you, we struggle at times. And we don't know when it's always going to happen. And it's okay that you sometimes struggle. It's okay that you were in the mood and now maybe the situation has changed and now you're not. Like, all of these things are okay. And we need to just have a space for which we can all communicate this. And that's it. That's what we want.
That's a great message.
Yeah, it is. Well, tell everybody where they can find you.
You can find us, Sadie and Silver, on Facebook. You can find us, Sadie Loves Silver, on Instagram.
Perfect. Well, thank you guys for sharing your story. And again, I want to remind all of our listeners, if you are struggling, don't hesitate to reach out. There's help out there. You don't have to do this alone. And we have a platform. You can check us out at stephanieandfox.com, where you can get in touch with us. We can put you in touch with other people if we need to. There's a community here that will work with you and will help you, and you're not fighting this fight alone.
That's right. Absolutely. You are not in this alone.
And it's okay.
We are your battle buddies. We got your six.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you guys again. And
have a good night.
Have a good night. Thank you for listening to our show. And remember, you are not in this alone, and we are here to help.
You can check us out at stephanieandfox.com and subscribe to all of our social media accounts to get free resources about evolving your intimacy.
Have a good night.
Have a good one.